Welcome to Based on What, the Helene Fold Health Trust National Institute for Evidence-Based Practice in Nursing and Healthcare podcast series. The podcast series is intended to provide an informative conversational platform about hot topics and trends in evidence-based practice and decision-making. Through the voices of evidence-based experts, leaders, mentors, practitioners, and decision-makers who bring a wide range of experiences and perspectives, we hope to broaden the conversation, expand understanding, and possibly create more questions. So let's get started.
Hi, my name is Lynn Gallagher-Ford. I'm the Senior Director of the Helene Fold Institute for Evidence-Based Practice in Nursing and Healthcare. And I'm here today with my colleague, my new colleague.
New friend.
Yes.
I'm Jennifer Hamilton-Gilbin. I am now the Quality Director at Southeast Health. I've been there for a little bit over a year. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, I started in orthopedics, med-surg, got into maternal child nursing, became a NICU nurse, and then became the manager of a maternal child unit for about 15 years. So I've had quite a journey in leadership. Yeah. One thing I found myself always doing is asking why. And the first conversation we had together, you were like, that's my favorite question. That's unique. That's not normal with someone who's in quality to always ask that question of why. But it's something I always found myself doing to try to find, you know, what's the best practice? What should we be doing? And we talked about maternal child.
Yeah.
Think about how many times we've asked why. And maternal style and how things have changed.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
How we used to bathe them and scrub them. And then now
or
we
put them to sleep on their bellies instead of their back. So, I mean, evidence does change on a regular basis. And so what I find, you know, not totally unique, but wonderfully unique about you is that's just your natural way of thinking that, you know, it's a lot about what we talk about. That's one of the hot issues in EVP is that it needs to be aligned with quality improvement. It doesn't stand alone. It doesn't need its own separate infrastructure. It's the only way to get best practice done right is to do evidence-based practice to get the practice right and then do process improvement to get the process done right. So you get the right thing done right every time. So if you do one without the other, you can't get there because if you have the good practice but you don't have a good process, you're stuck. And if you have if you fix a process on the wrong thing, you're stuck also. So,
exactly. So
that's some of the really current work that's going on in EVP is really trying to work with quality departments to, you know, have them see both. And you're just a natural at that. So I was so excited to meet you and start talking to you just to begin with. And then we have our shared background in maternal child
that's
health.
Right.
So we're just meant to be.
Meant to be,
So a little bit about why. So we are going to be doing the leadership presentation in this modular program. So that's part of why we wanted to introduce ourselves, because you'll be hearing us do this kind of voiced over PowerPoint, and we wanted to know a little bit more about us. But before we do that, we want to just spend a little more time talking about, so your background, so 15 years as a manager.
Yeah.
Is
absolutely
also a spectacular accomplishment. That's just, you know, one of the hardest jobs in the whole wide world. And so, you know, you already bring your, you know, strong leadership and relationship-based, you know, work to the QI department also.
Right.
So one of the things that we were talking about was sort of that piece of what you bring to QI. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, how do you assure quality is happening in the real world? Like, you know, you send out the new practice and then you know, some people just assume it's just going to magically happen out there and we'll fill out our check boxes and everything will be great. And that doesn't usually happen. So I was really interested in your insights as to some of the things that you bring to it with your leadership background that make your approach kind of unique and wonderful.
So one of the initiatives that we've used this in is doing bedside shift report.
Mm-hmm.
You could just roll that out, say this is what you're supposed to do, and say go forth and conquer and sit in your office and say, oh, I'm sure it's done. But that's not the approach we took. The approach we took is to go on the floor and audit, and not just checking the boxes, but having that interactive audit.
Yeah.
So we're asking them, how's it going? What's the challenges? What makes that feel comfortable? What makes that not feel comfortable? In those audits, we find some really good information. We can really improve the process by asking those questions and not just checking a box. An example of that was I did an audit recently on one of our units, and they talked about the patient's ambulation, how they assist, how they move, but they didn't talk about the fall risk. there really wasn't that conversation. And it's something we've been working on. So yeah. After it, we debrief. Everyone that I watch, we debrief. And I'm like, so tell me about that. You did such a great job in all these points. So why do we not feel comfortable talking about the fall risk? And they're like, well, we just talked about it at the Safe Start Huddle. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. Lesson learned. Now right. I understand. And right. then how do we move that to where we involve the patient? So again, if I would just sit there and check a box and not ask right. questions and interact, I wouldn't learn.
That it was in the wrong place.
It was in the wrong place.
They were doing it, but in the wrong right. place. But mm-hmm. if you're just filling out boxes,
right.
you never hear that. And what I love is, I don't know if you coined this phrase, but this interactive audit, is that your name for it? Or is that just what it just seems like that's the right name?
It just seems like the right name.
It's a great name. It's a great name because I think it's something that, brings a whole other, because when you say audit, I automatically go to the checklist and no conversation. And what we know from the evidence is that traditional audits are a very, very poor way of really saying, is it really getting done? Right. What we find in the literature is the checklist is filled out 100%, but it got done about 40% of the
exactly.
time. So we know that's a failed strategy, but this is a really great approach. And I think that, you know, a lot of that comes from just your experience and knowing that, you know, things don't just happen. When you right. have leadership background, you know that, you know, there's a transformational, transactional element to that is what is the key to leadership and now leading, you know, right. evidence-based QI. So I just think I love that story.
Okay.
So in your work, both as a leader, leading evidence-based practice and evidence-based QI and all the things that you're doing currently, so what have you found are, you know, some of the biggest barriers in moving evidence-based practice and evidence-based QI, you know, into the organization and sustaining it? What's your biggest struggles?
Well, I know you say this a lot. It's the way we've always done it.
Yes.
We have that all the time. Or Dr. So-and-so said that we have to do it this way.
Right.
So overcoming that. One that it's kind of new to me is, well, the evidence didn't work for us. Mm. So that's the new one that I've heard a lot. It's like, well, we tried that. It didn't work. Nice try.
Yeah.
So how explaining that to this organization is, it's not the evidence that was the issue. It was probably that PI piece. It's how we implemented it and how we sustained it, i.e. changing to that interactive audit.
Right.
How are we going to keep that long term? Because the evidence didn't fail us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I find is I work with so many different organizations, and a lot of times as, you know, the folks who come to the immersion or people that we work with, you know, on locations, they bring the evidence forward and there's all this resistance. And
yeah.
oftentimes it's exactly what you're saying. We already tried that. It didn't work. It was
right.
a failure. And people are really, really stuck on that. And so it's, you know, how do you, it's that engagement
right.
piece, and it's the power of the evidence where,
right.
you know, a lot of times people say, well, our patients are much sicker than
mm-hmm.
that. And quite frankly, they're not,
right.
but they got all their excuses like mm-hmm. already lined up, and it's, you know, it's having that ability to bring the evidence forward in a way that is clear as a bell,
right.
you know, and having those interactions with certain people. So do you find there's different barriers from different people, like kind of we get this from this group, and we get this from this group, and this from this group, and there's sort of, have you found
yeah.
patterns to that?
I have, and spending 15 years in that area, I feel comfortable saying middle management kind of has that opportunity, and I think it's the education. There's not a lot of training for that middle management role.
Yeah.
You're usually a really good nurse, a really good charge nurse, and you become a leader.
Yeah.
And a lot of trial by error, you learn. But if we could really beef that up, kind of like what we're doing right here, giving them some tools
yeah.
and some education, then I think they would have that understanding. They don't know what they don't know.
Right.
So we need to invest in that to help to build them up, because they can be the barrier, because they're the connection to the front line and they're the connection to the C-suite. So
right.
we have to really work on that. Population.
Well, and it's hard to admit that you don't know something for
yeah.
anybody, you know,
right.
it's, you know, you don't want that exposure. So how do you introduce, you know, this knowledge in a way that people can get it sort of, you know, fluidly and just
right.
be like, oh, we're doing this and everybody's learning this.
Right.
And, you know, that includes leadership. And so what we have found most recently, and again, another hot issue in EVP is this connection to QI
mm-hmm.
is essential. building infrastructure like EBP councils or integrating the EBP competencies or, you know, really building true, like, hardwired infrastructure connecting with the QI process. Right. That's all really important. But if you don't have leadership engagement,
right,
you will not get this done. This cannot happen unless the leaders get on board and do the things that only leaders can do, which is create the culture, support the culture,
right,
you know, resource it, role model it, utilize it in their own practice and their own decision making. Those are extremely powerful things. And it's impossible for an organization to do it without the leadership. But oftentimes we get leadership way up here and we get, you know, the front line, bedside, chair side, table side, as my friend Kevin from Sloan Kettering says. You know, we get these folks and we miss these people in the middle. And some of that resistance, I think, exactly what you're saying, comes from not knowing and, you know, just being resistant out of sort of fear, because most times resistance to change is fear. So a really thoughtful strategy about how do we bring this knowledge and skill set to that that middle level, not just in nursing, but across the disciplines is a big deal. You're spot on with that.
Creating that culture of inquiry, and I've heard that throughout your presentations as well, making them feel comfortable asking why, celebrating the why, so that they feel safe to do that. Because it is hard to sometimes question if you're unsure and you're not feeling safe. So we have to create that culture.
That is essential. And that's just culture. So a lot of people are talking about that. That is exactly where it fits, because being able to ask any question about anything means it's safe. And until you can really get into the nitty gritty of why do we do it different on Monday and we did it on Tuesday, it's the same thing, but it's two different providers and I'm getting different equipment and like, why do we do it two different ways?
Exactly.
So it's really important. So my other question for you was, so I never like to end on a negative, let's say not a positive. So in this same work and this journey and this your passion for this, what have you found to be facilitators or things that have helped you to bring it along? Where are those little nuggets of helpful?
Well, for me and our organization, it's just a new leadership. We have new leadership that's very invested in this. So investing the time and the resources, sending me to the immersion, sending other peers to the immersion, taking that time. I'm slowing down quick change. So it's not always about just quick change. What's the right change?
Yeah.
And being more cautious with that and more mindful. So that's that light at the end of the tunnel for me is the investment in the resources of human capital, which is what we're doing.
It's great. It's essential.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, the point is resources come in many forms. You know, people think, oh, just pay for this and pay for that. But one of the, you know, the biggest resources in this, and it's always listed as the number one barrier, is time.
Right.
And so people are like, we don't have time to do EBP. We can't do EBP on top of everything else. Well, the whole point is you're not supposed to do it on top of everything else. It's the new way of solving problems. So the old way of solving problems goes away because this is the new way. And it doesn't take more time. It's just a different approach that must be learned. And so as you learn this, you know, this new approach, the other one has to start to go away, because stacking on top, nobody has enough time to do things twice.
Right. Exactly.
But the old way of doing it, we keep trying to solve the same problem over and over because we don't use this kind of a methodology. So really in the long run does save time. But that's the part you got to get people to believe is possible. And beliefs and, vision and, setting a goal and leadership, really saying this is how we're going to be and this is what we're going to do and being serious about it, is so incredibly powerful. So I am so glad that when I meet people like you, because you're out there really doing what I, you know, talk about all the time and all the work we do. So it's just great to, you know, meet you and know that you're out there. In Missouri,
you're
doing a great job. So,
thank you.
So we're going to do the presentation together, and so hopefully you'll learn more about sort of some of the things we've talked about, but in a little more structured way with slides to go with it about what are the critical elements for leading EBP and being an EBP leader. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
You too.
Thanks.
Welcome to Based on What, the Helene Fold Health Trust National Institute for Evidence-Based Practice in Nursing and Healthcare podcast series. podcast series is intended to provide an informative conversational platform about hot topics and trends in evidence-based practice and decision-making. Through the voices of evidence-based experts, leaders, mentors, practitioners, and decision-makers who bring a wide range of experiences and perspectives, we hope to broaden the conversation, expand understanding, and possibly create more questions. So let's get started.